Chapter 10. How does your concern affect me?
A reading from the Gospel of St. John, chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the wedding. When the wine ran short, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servers, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone water jars there for Jewish ceremonial washings, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus told them, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it. And when the head waiter tasted the water that had become wine, without knowing where it came from, although the servers who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves good wine first, and then when people have drunk freely, an inferior one. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this as the beginning of his signs in Cana in Galilee, and so revealed his glory, and his disciples began to believe in him. The first chapter of John's Gospel ends with Jesus foretelling the signs his disciples will see. The 20th chapter ends with the evangelist telling of the many signs Jesus performed, even beyond the ones recorded in his Gospel. Between that beginning and end, what takes place at the wedding in Cana is the first of these all-important signs, and what is revealed is more glorious than we could have imagined. Jesus controls the action from the 6th verse onward, but his mother is the focal point in the first 3 verses. Her presence is emphasized as a first priority, while Jesus is lumped in with his disciples as also invited. The transition from the unnamed Mary to Jesus in the 4th and 5th verses builds around what appears to be a significant point of tension. Actually, it doesn't just appear to be, it is tension. Jesus' question expresses this in the boldest terms. The more literal translation of the question, "How does your concern affect me?" would be, "What to me and to you?" Another English translation puts the question as, "What have you to do with me?" which really brings out the question's most disturbing aspect. It is the very same question that a demon asks Jesus in the Gospel of Mark. "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth?" In Mark, that unclean spirit is diametrically opposed to the coming of the Son of Man. The presence of the latter means the driving out of the former. They cannot abide together. Here with his mother, the tension in the question is just as tight, but in a wholly different way. Not only is Mary unlike the demon, she is also unlike Jesus' brethren who are separated from Jesus because of their unbelief. There is no lack of belief here, just as there is no opposition. Yet Mary stands in tension with her son who questions her. It is for him an issue of time, or rather of obedience. He does his father's will. That is his mission and his identity. Mary is asking him to act before his time. "My hour has not yet come." In the fullness of time, the glory of the Father will be revealed through him. He himself is the sign of his Father's glory. The signs he works unravel this revelation. By what Jesus does, his disciples will come to see his identity as the one who reveals the Father's glory. Despite his protest to his mother's request, Jesus does what she wills. He performs a sign before his appointed time. Does this mean Jesus is taking a break from waiting for the Father? Does he perform a one-off deed as if to say, "I await my appointed hour in my Father's will"? But, okay, just this once, I'll do your will instead, Mom? It would be naive to think so. But what are we to think? By the end of this episode, we hear that Jesus did indeed reveal his glory in this sign. At Mary's behest, he begins to do what he said he would do, displaying great things. It is obvious what this mighty work is, as Jesus wondrously changes an enormous quantity of water into the choicest wine. But the revelation of glory is more than what we stare at here. If we only stare at the spectacular, we risk missing something else that might be even more marvelous. What he reveals here is not just the power to change water into wine, but also the humility to be moved. Both sides reveal the glory of God. Of the four Gospels, it is especially in John's that Jesus is totally in control of the action, even and especially when it seems like he is most under the authority of another. During his sham trial with Pilate, he is revealed to be fully in charge. He is, after all, the incarnate Word, who was in the beginning with God, who is God. He is the Word whose words have the eternal authority of the Father, upon whom he waits, and to whose will he hastens without fail. And all of that makes the beginning of this episode even stranger, because his mother is moving the action. She appears to be in charge at first, and there really is no other way to see it. How surprising ought this be? Every bit as surprising as someone challenging God and changing God's mind. That would seem ludicrous. Except that it isn't without precedent. Abraham pleaded with God on behalf of the people of Sodom that the city be spared. Abraham proved persuasive, at least to a point. Even more shocking, Moses pleaded with God for the sake of the whole Israelite people who had fallen into idolatry at the base of Sinai. The Lord relented, and those who walked back into the Lord's camp again were spared. What kind of God is this who changes his mind? The same God here, in the revelation of the incarnate Word, yields to the pleading of his mother. It appears like the diminishment of the absolute authority of God, but in truth, it is the elevation of his creature. In this tension, there is no conflict. In her intercession on behalf of the bride and groom, Jesus' mother is raised to the dignity of a cause. She does not work the sign, but the Word who became flesh and dwelt among us allows himself to be redirected in obedience to her concern. He lets her concern affect him. Is this not an astounding revelation of the unthinkable power of God? A God who even transcends his own authority, his own unrivaled claim to supremacy, in order to listen to his creature? What takes place afterward is indeed an act of God, wholly dependent on divine power, and not at all possible by the work of human hands. And yet, the one who has all authority hereby allows the intercession of his mother to become a secondary cause, to achieve the outcome his Father wills. The Father wills the glorification of the Son, who will show the glory of the Father. The changing of the water into wine begins to reveal this glory through the mysterious power of Jesus, who does great things. And because Jesus does this great thing in response to the intercession of his mother, he reveals the power of prayer to a God who is willing to listen and to be moved by the concerns of his creatures. Does the mother of Jesus change the mind of Jesus? Did Moses or Abraham change God's mind? Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that God permits their intercession to matter. No, in the sense that God does not yield his authority. St. Thomas Aquinas therefore teaches what our motive in praying is, not that we may change the divine disposition, but that by our prayers we may obtain what God has appointed. In his surpassing greatness, God folds our prayer into the scheme of salvation, so that the will of the Father, which Jesus never fails to serve, works through our prayers. Mary shows what a human being can be, one who cooperates with Jesus for the salvation of the world and the glorification of the Father. When the Word takes flesh and dwells among us, the Word dwells in our concerns too. Jesus is the Word who listens. Here in John's Gospel, he listens first to his mother. The glorification of God is hidden in this humility of God, power so great that it transcends all forms of rivalry. Jesus allows Mary's concern to affect him because the elevation of the humanity that the Word of God has taken on does not threaten the majesty of the divinity he shares with the Father. The tension of Jesus' question is the paradox of divine freedom, in which Jesus is translated into the obedience of a son to his mother. The disciples who believed because they saw Jesus change water into wine also saw the Son of God obey his mother. It is not without significance, then, that Jesus addresses his mother as woman when he asks this sharp question. To us, this seems out of place because it would probably be rude in our contemporary context. But in antiquity, it is an address of respect and affection. Even still, there is no precedent that we can find for a son calling his mother by this title. What we have instead is the most ancient of all human addresses, when the first creature names the one who is his true companion, woman. Those first two were created to lead each other into truth, to cooperate with their Creator in the sanctification of creation. Instead, they led each other into the sin of disobedience, in a perversion of that original solidarity in which they were created, and in which they lived as one. The woman took the forbidden fruit and gave it to her husband, and he ate it without deliberation. But now, here, at the feast at Cana, where man and wife become one, the man Jesus takes the concern of his mother, whom he calls woman, and allows himself, with the fullness of deliberation, to follow her word and thereby bring her along in his mission of obedience to the Father's will. He is restoring humanity to what it is meant to be, the instrument of solidarity, of harmony, of divine glory. Prayer. Lord, hear our prayer.